Good evening. This is KGVM FM 95.9 on your dial. And tonight's show is the Meditation to Self-Realization. I'm Jim.
And I'm Marion.
And we will present a show today. We're going to have an interview with Joel Brzezowski. And then we'll have a couple, a reading perhaps.
And true.
Meditation.
Yes, in fact, before we get started, I would like to do just a pause and a breathing so that we all get, so that we're all unified together. So please sit still with your spine held straight. And take some nice deep breaths. Inhale slowly and deeply. And make your exhale a little longer than your inhale. Relax your face. Relax your shoulders. Feel your chest rise as you breathe in and fall when you breathe out. And now, with your next inhale, smile. And with your exhale, you may gently open your eyes if you had shut them in the first place.
Well, hi, Joel.
Hello, Jim. Hello, Marion.
Hello, and welcome. We're excited to interview you today, Joel.
I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, good. I'll tell you, just for the public audience out there, we're all in a meditation group, a morning meditation, prayer group, whatever you want to call it. And it's pretty dynamic. And we're on a 7-day intro into the Oneness Day.
World Oneness Day.
If you get a chance, Sunday. I don't have the times, but you can check it out on Google. Just Google in AKAM, E-K-A-M, and .com. And there should be an ad for it. It's a freebie, and it's going to be beautiful. And the reason I want to share this right off the get-go is because this morning, Joe led our group. And I got to tell you, Joe, between what Amy had to say and then how you led the meditation, it just brought everything, everybody, and the whole world into that whole oneness concept of and peace, cooperation, understanding, everything that goes with it. So I just want to give you my appreciation for leading us in that direction.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
This World Oneness Day is a big event. I just want to talk a little bit about oneness. Some people have a misunderstanding about what oneness means. And oneness as we're using it does not mean that everybody's the same. It means that we have an experience of being not disconnected. That is, of being connected on the heart level with each other and, in fact, with all of life, all of humanity and all of life, and even beyond what we consider to be living. It can go to feeling connected with the whole universe. And it's the kind of feeling that makes us realize that if I do something to harm someone else, anyone else, it harms me. And I feel it. It's not something in my head. I feel it in my heart. And that's where it really counts. That way, I learn really quickly that I don't want to harm people. Mm-hmm. And also, if I do something that helps other people, I feel that too. I feel their joy. I feel their relief, their sense of freedom. And I like that. So it's a state that is very conducive to teaching us how to behave in a way to make us and everyone else happy.
Wow, thank you, Joel. That was a beautiful explanation.
Beautiful, because it is so prevalent, or you know, to connect with people at that heart level.
And it's a place that we don't necessarily live in, so for you to put it into words, it's like I have the experience, but to wrap my brain around putting it into words has not really happened yet. So I'm grateful that you shared that.
Especially explaining it to other people.
Yes.
What are you guys doing? Oh.
So Joel, we wanted to ask you how did you get in touch with the oneness movement or learn about it, and what kind of impact has it had on your life?
I was first introduced to it in about 2007 or 8 through a book that my oldest brother lent me about it. I read the book and was very attracted to it. But at that time, neither he nor I knew of anyone practicing Diksha or oneness blessing in the area around here where I live, which is in Spokane, Washington. So it wasn't until a year or two later when my brother found that there were people practicing it over on the other side of Washington State, the other side of the Cascades. And he got his first oneness blessing over the telephone. He called one of these people up and talked for an hour or two and received the Diksha over the phone. And he was very impressed. He really felt it. And so he started occasionally driving over to Yelm and other places on the other side of the Cascade Mountains, that is west of the mountains, for oneness blessing events. And on his, I don't know if it was his second or his third one, he invited me to come along with him. So that was my first oneness blessing. There were 25 or so people in the room to receive a blessing. And the blessing giver, Grandma Nixon, talked about it a little bit, and then she went into the process of preparing us, and she played some music, some special music to prepare us. And when that music started, I found myself, I was sitting on a chair around the room like everybody else. I found my spine straightening up all by itself. I mean, I sat 2 inches taller and my spine was straight, and it felt good, but it was very interesting experience, because I didn't tell it to do that. And of course, they say that in order to receive spiritual energy and have it flow freely within you, it's very helpful to have your spine straight. So I understood that, but I didn't really even know what a straight spine felt like. I mean, I could try before that, but this showed me, because I had confidence it knew, it did it right. And then again, while this preparation music was going, before she even started giving Diksha, I had tears flowing out of my eyes. And during the Diksha, even more. It was a very moving experience. So this confirmed the attraction that I had for it from reading the book. I could tell there's really something here, and it's doing something to me that feels really wonderful.
Yeah. If you don't mind me interrupting here, it's that with the music, you know, I remember asking one time, and you know, they do the frequency music, so it covers that alpha, beta, theta, delta brainwaves. And we've had some experience with that, doing flotation tanks and whatnot. And it does change the different frequencies. Like, I don't know if you hear some of the background, especially with Marian's meditation, that was a heart frequency going on right now. So it's pretty powerful. But I can see how it would make you sit straight up.
Yeah, so... we came back to Spokane, and sometime later we found that in Coeur d'Alene, about 30, 35 miles east of here, there was a monthly Oneness Blessing Circle meeting. And so we started going there every month to receive Oneness Blessing. And about a year approximately later, that group organized a weekend event to train Oneness Blessing givers and invited a trainer, an authorized trainer, to come and run that weekend class or workshop. And so I did that with my brother and several other people that I knew. And we became Oneness Blessing givers. And from then on, we started a regular Oneness Blessing circle here in Spokane. And we continue to go to the one in Idaho also every month and participate in that. Only from then on, we weren't just receiving, we were receiving and giving, which is even better.
So, Joel, can you tell us a little bit about, now that things have changed so much with the Deeksha givers and receivers, what kind of impact did it have back then on your life as far as your day-to-day experiences?
The impact, for the most part, is gradual. So it's a little difficult to pinpoint specific things. I can say overall that I think it's had the largest impact in my emotional and mental and spiritual advancement of anything in my life. There is one event or milestone, I could say, that I can point to, though, that is worth relating. I had, with my brother, I'd gone to a very intensive 3-day oneness event. It was in Canada, actually, in a little town called Hope, Canada, close to Vancouver, BC. And that involved a very intensive internal purification, that is, clearing out of stuck emotions and beliefs and judgments and opinions and all kinds of things, the sorts of things that keep our energy stuck and keep us from being who we really are. And about 10 or 15 days after that, I remember pretty clearly an experience of feeling compassion for myself for the first time in my life. I had felt compassion for others before, or thought I had. Well, I had, but it turns out it was pretty shallow. I didn't know that. But I felt compassion for myself, and of course that brought tears to my eyes too. And after that, I could feel compassion for myself, and I could feel compassion for others on a much deeper level than I ever could before I had the ability to feel compassion for myself. And that was definitely a milestone. That was a life changer. And of course, that ability to feel compassion. This is not just thinking it. I mean, I have thought compassion all my life, but this is feeling it on a deep heart level. And that ability has, of course, grown since then, continues to grow. And it leads to feelings of connection, especially in my case, especially with people on a heart level that are the highlights of my life. I mean, that there isn't any feeling that's better than this really deep heart level connection where I'm feeling, I don't know what they're thinking, but I'm feeling what they're feeling. And it's such a delicious thing. I mean, even if they're feeling sad or whatever they're feeling, joyful, sad, fearful, heartbroken, whatever it is, I feel that. But along with that comes really a delicious joy in the connection, in this sharing, because it's these feelings are common to every human, and to share them on that deep level is just wonderful. So that is a primary motivator for me to continue on this path.
Well, easy to understand that. And I love the way that you said how you felt compassion for yourself for the very first time. And most of the time we understand, or we're told, that in order to love someone else, we need to love ourselves. And that's really different. When we have compassion, we really truly can love ourselves. It's not just an intellectual, I love you, I love myself. And it goes so much deeper to the real core of who we are when all the judgments, opinions, and old rusty belief systems that don't work for us depart. So it was very beautifully, eloquently said.
Yeah, and it's very inspiring too, because you talk about not only compassion for yourself, but feeling the others, whether it was joy or pain. Would you say it's delicious just to feel their feelings, their and I was going to ask you, so how, what's the difference between shallow compassion and this deep compassion that you have now?
Yeah. Shallow compassion is, there can be some feeling, but a lot of it's in the head.
Mm-hmm.
It's an ideal that we're trying to live up to. It's a good ideal, but when it happens in the head, it falls a lot short of what it can be.
Right, because it's easily connected to your next thought or your next opinion or your
versus
the judgment
your,
that
versus
comes
connected to the heart.
Exactly.
Yes.
And to the actual feeling.
And the heart is really, the heart really is our heart. It's the core of our being. It's where life actually happens. In our head, in our brain, many of us often thought that's where life happened, but I'm discovering that life in your brain is, well, it's superficial.
It's very mundane.
And it goes quick.
Well, it can be very complex, and it can be very interesting, but it just doesn't carry the kind of meaning that heart life does. When you're connected with the heart, that just means so much more. And it's not a meaning that, in the sense that, in an intellectual sense, because it's not intellectual, it bypasses the intellect. So it's a little difficult to talk about in a meaningful way unless you've had that experience. Yeah. Unless the listener has had that experience. But it takes life to a whole nother level. And it gives life a meaning that doesn't depend on what's going on outside of you.
I can relate, because that now that you've defined the shallow and the deep, I can, now I've got it marked, because I know when I'm deep in compassion, it affects me in such a way that it brings tears and I'll cry, and or I'll feel that other person's pain versus just kind of, it comes so quick and gone so quick that I don't take the time to actually be there with it.
Yeah. And sometimes it can, from the mental state, it can feel more like imagining rather than being there and being very present and alive with that same intensity of feeling. And I think that's the greatest gift we can give one another, truly. The gift of being so present and so connected heart to heart that we get to experience that oneness. That universal oneness.
Yeah, I mean, I'm inspired now to really, one of my intentions, now that we're just all talking here together, I'm going to put out my intention, and that is to slow down enough to really feel every situation, even when I'm out in nature. You know,
that's probably the easiest place. Well, at least for me it is.
Yes, for many people, nature is very conducive to opening up the heart and feeling. That's an excellent way to practice it, because it tends to be a lot easier for many people.
Yeah.
So let's backtrack a little. And you and Marion were mentioning Diksha. Maybe both of you can expound a little bit on what that means, the meaning of it, and how it relates to relationship, or is it like a blessing that you can give people, or let's delve into that a little bit.
Okay. Diksha essentially is a gift from the divine. It's sometimes called a transference of divine energy. When we give Diksha, we're not giving anything from ourselves. We're not sharing our energy with the receiver. What we do is we connect to the divine, and then we open up and step back and let it flow through us. We step back to get out of the way. We don't direct it. We don't decide what it's going to do. We direct it to the receiver. But beyond that, we don't decide what it's going to do or how it's going to affect them at all. Because this is coming from the universal intelligence. It knows far better than we do what this receiver needs in this moment. And this is a big part of why I was so attracted to it, because I was aware and have been aware for a long time that I don't even know what I need a lot of times, but I certainly don't know what somebody else needs.
Yeah.
So I, if I'm going to be helping people, I need help with that. I need some help that knows a whole lot more than I do. And that is the nature of the divine, the universal intelligence. It knows. And it also is, in all its actions, it's based on love. So it not only knows, but it not only knows what's best for you, but that's its purpose, is to give you what's best for you.
Right. And so even when we do give Diksha and we ask people if they want to hold an intention, they can put their intention there. And then it's pretty much important to understand that, to not be fixed on the outcome, because like we don't know what's necessarily always best for us, the universal intelligence does, and so it may come out looking different than what we think it might.
Yes, I've had enough experiences of thinking that I really wanted something and then getting it and finding out, I don't want this. and on the other hand, not knowing that I wanted something and getting it and finding out, wow, this is absolutely fabulous. I really do want it. So I, for me, it's pretty easy at this point to not even try to set an intention for receiving Diksha. Occasionally I do, but most of the time I'm quite happy letting the universal intelligence decide, because I know that it knows far better than I do what I need.
That's great. So, but now that you just opened up Pandora's box in my mind.
Uh-oh.
Because now
I know what that looks
so
like.
The divine intelligence, God, where are we at? Don't forget, there's people listening that might have a strong Christian background or Catholic background or believe in God or Jesus or don't believe in one or the other. So how do you describe the divine intelligence and the divine? It sounds like two different things, or is that the same?
They're not separate. In fact, that's sort of the overall essence of the divine, is that it's not separate from anything. It's the source from which everything came, and not only came from it, but remains within it, because it's impossible to leave it. In the Bible, it talks about creation, how God created, it doesn't use the word the universe, but we can use that. The thing is, even God can't create something out of nothing. So when God created the universe, he used the only material there was at hand, which was God. I mean, there wasn't anything else before he created. So everything is made out of God. And everything still is part of God. So that's, and so that everything includes all of the religions, all of the various concepts of God that people have, and on this planet there are at least 7 billion different concepts of God currently. And it includes everything. So what you call it, how you think of it, doesn't really matter. Everyone has his or her own individual relationship with this divine, and we use different names. And even if we use the same name, my concept is going to be different from yours. I mean, it has to be, because my experience is different, and that's where it's really important, is my experience of God is going to be different from yours, and it's not better than yours or worse than yours. It's just unique, because God created all of us unique. And so this uniqueness is something to savor, not to be afraid of or condemn. I mean, part of the joy of creation is to create something different each time. And that's what God does with us and with, I mean, you look at anything, even just within this planet, you look at anything, there are no two anythings that are exactly alike.
Well, that's beautiful. I like you using the word source, you know, and because we all have different sources of what the creator or the creation is and was. So I really like that.
A different idea about what the source is.
Mm-hmm.
Or a different experience. I like the experience, yeah.
Yeah. I had somebody ask me one time, Jim, what's your source? I didn't have a clue. What? Oh gosh. And I won't tell you what the response was.
Yeah.
It was back in the hippie days, so
you can imagine. Well, so I think the thing that I'm most interested, Joel, is the in-depth explanations you give for your experiences and for even your understanding, I mean, Jim and I are pretty new in the oneness movement and new at being a Diksha giver. And so it's, so what I have is more experiential and trying to put experiences into words is pretty challenging. And it sounds like you've had so many beautiful experiences that you've been able to ride through many life experiences with them and then be able to verbalize beautifully how it's impacted you and how it's impacted other people.
Yes. Yeah. That brings up another point.
Good.
I've already said that it's had probably the biggest single impact on my life in terms of my progress, spiritual, emotional, and mental progress in life. But it does impact also other people around me. As I become more peaceful, the people around me also become more peaceful. They sense it in me and react to it. When I'm reacting, like if I get a button pushed and I'm reacting defensively, that just inspires a defensive reaction on the other person or the other people. And if we just let it go, we can come out to quite a battle. And I've done that many times, especially with siblings.
Right. <That one.
laughs> But now I do it a whole lot less because I have more of a sense of peace inside and less of a sense of having to defend myself. I don't feel as empty as I did. I don't feel like there's something in there that I need to hang on to and defend. And so even if I do feel a button being pressed and some the hair standing up on the back of my neck, that sort of thing, so that I feel like I want to try to defend myself. Now I usually notice it right away, and or at least pretty quickly. So most of the time I don't react to it at all. Sometimes I do and get into it a little bit, but again, I don't stay there very long because I notice I feel terrible when I'm defending myself.
Yeah.
When I'm battling with anyone. And I don't like that. So I'm much more aware of what's going on inside of me and feeling the feelings that I'm generating in myself with this feeling defensive, for example, as opposed to being connected on a heart level with somebody. Such a contrast in those two types of feelings. So it's, a lot of it is just being aware, paying attention to what's really going on inside of me.
And so do you sometimes feel you battle with yourself over certain things?
Oh, yeah.
Or is that eliminated?
Oh, no. Well, it's definitely
minimized.
Diminished.
Yeah.
But it's not gone, yeah. But again, I do that... I don't take it so personally when I'm battling myself.
And you don't bruise yourself and you don't end up with any black eyes.
Right. Yeah.
That's really good. I'm speaking for myself. I'm in this mental state right now of giving away my power or sucking up somebody else's power. And so when you bring up about being defensive, that's one of my tricks too, you know, is to get in the ring and then, you know, okay, I'm going to be defensive until I can give that final blow and win the situation over. And so now I'm really watching that because I don't want to, if Marion and I get into something, I would rather feel what's going on in our relationship heart to heart versus trying to manipulate or have power over or have power taken away from me, so to speak. And when I mean power, I don't mean forceful. I just mean giving in, giving up my ideals, but also listening and, like you said, peacefully being compassionate with the other person and honoring and respecting their ideals and their, it's not easy.
What?
I wish I could go up the elevator instead of having to walk each stair up the skyscraper, you know? Jeez.
Yes, but you know, we see and we learn and we experience a lot on the stairway. And if we went up in the elevator, there's a lot we would miss. I mean, it would be nice to be up there quickly, but there's a lot we'd miss. So I'm grateful for whatever way works, however I can get there.
The stairway to heaven.
Yeah.
At least we can envision it spiral so that we go around and we can see the scenery that we're in and get to experience a whole lot more. Oh. The elevator ride always kind of takes you so quick.
Yeah.
You're not necessarily ready to be there.
Do you remember that one on YouTube, that one gal, and she talked about the spiral and then how you let go of the past as you're going.
Well, it was about, I actually have a picture of it too, that when we're going through life, we never really go backwards. We're always on a spiral going upward. And sometimes we keep revisiting the same, whether it's belief systems or thought processes, yet we see it in a different way, a more rich way once we've gone around and experienced more.
I know where that picture is.
Yeah. It's a pretty profound picture, yeah, because it shows all of life on there in a spiral.
Mm. Yeah.
When did you start taking this path to, as everybody calls it, seeking, being a seeker?
Well, maybe when I was 8 years old.
Wow.
I remember when I was 8 years old asking my mother, how do you listen to divine guidance? And how do you know that you're hearing divine guidance and not just something you're making up in your head?
Hmm.
Unfortunately, my mother didn't have a good answer to that. She knew how to do it, but she didn't know how to tell somebody how to do it. but that's a question that has remained with me all my life. And so about 17 years ago, maybe, I came across a relatively crude way of doing that, of being able to ask questions of the divine and get answers. And so I started using that, and that has guided me along this path in ways that I certainly wouldn't have imagined. But by following that guidance, that ability to hear divine guidance has grown in many ways. It's grown out of that relatively crude method that I started with. I haven't used that in a long time. And gotten more sophisticated and more reliable and more creative. This growth hasn't stopped. There's still plenty more for me to learn, but it's a process. And what's important is when I asked for this guidance, this 17 years ago or so, I was told by the guidance pretty quickly that this guidance is available, but if I don't take it seriously, if I'm just playing with it, then I could lose it. Because the divine is here to help us if we want help. But if we don't really want help, then it's going to let us play on our own until we want help. So this boiled down to, I decided at that point that I'd already experienced a number of situations where, depending on my own resources, I had really fouled things up. And I was not happy with where I was going under my own steam and under my own guidance. So I really wanted some help in those areas. And I just decided, okay, I'm going to follow this guidance. That's it. And that dedication to actually following the guidance has been, for me at least, it's been an important factor in my being able to continue developing more, better guidance and to receive more guidance.
Well, that brings me to tears because it speaks of such truth, you know, looking back on life experiences and how, ever since I was a child, I had guidance, you know, a lot in nature. And then watching how I would abandon that guidance and go ahead and make those choices that, I'll say I regret, definitely regret some of them. And at the same time, I can celebrate and appreciate what I learned through those difficult times and that I can now truly say that I surrender. I surrender and I am open and I am willing to do what I'm guided to do, regardless of what I think. Because boy, those thoughts want to take me around the block and then some. So
up the spiral and back.
I don't know if it takes me up. not until I'm truly willing to walk the path. So,
well, we're winding down time-wise.
Okay.
We'd like to do a little reading from the Four Secrets and then a little meditation. So I want to thank you, Joel, for taking the time to do this interview. It's been profound.
Thank you for inviting me. It is a very profound and I could say even joyous adventure in life.
Yes.
We feel that, yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, may you remain in the beautiful state.
Yes, thank you. And I wish that for everyone who's listening.
Yes.
So Marion's going to do a little reading from the Four Sacred Secrets. And this is actually a chapter called The First Life Journey, Heal the Wounded Child by Krishna G.
Okay. Most people live with a sense of self-imposed claustrophobia. Perhaps you have experienced this painful state yourself. It's as if a crowd showed up at your front door and announced they were throwing a party. Only this was not just any crowd. The crew flooding into your living room uninvited included everyone who had ever wronged you, hurt you, made you feel ashamed to be yourself. Before you knew it, they began to offer unsolicited opinions about the decor, the choice of music, and, well, every decision you've ever made. They were loud, they were judgmental, and they didn't want to leave. You did anything to escape the criticism, but it was impossible to ignore this crowd, and unfortunately, wine only made them louder. The more you asked them to leave, the noisier they became. Not knowing what to do, you froze. Sure, you would have loved nothing more than some peace and quiet. And yet, strangely enough, after a few hours of this racket, you got used to their unwelcome guests. Many of them were, after all, the people you loved most. Your parents, your siblings, your first friends. Still, the longer they stayed, the more they wore you down. You found it became impossible to disentangle their words, opinions, and ideas from your own. You started to feel tentative and skittish as a cat on a fence. If only you could find a little space. If only you could get unstuck. If only you could start moving forward again. Life is a great river, ever rushing forward, always presenting us with new opportunities for love, connection, and expansion. If, however, we want to move forward with it, we must become free of our past that tethers us to the murky and stagnant banks where no forward motion is possible. To return to our party analogy, we must make peace with those unwanted guests who have taken up residence in our minds and hearts. We must awaken to the dimension of calm in our consciousness. We must arise to a state of total presence to all the voices telling us that we are stupid, foolish, unworthy, as well as the ones telling us that we are on the right and everyone, that we are right and everyone else is wrong. How? By healing the wounded child that lives within us, frozen in time, it cries, drowned out by the raucous crowd. We must hold spiritual vision to loosen the grip of the past so that our inner ice may thaw and we break free from the rigidity of the past so we can be present to the present and more effortlessly and move effortlessly into the future. When we do, there is no turning back anymore. Our life will begin to flow like a great river toward the ocean, toward greater order, well-being, and expansion. So that was the reading from Chapter 1 in The Four Sacred Secrets by Preetaji and Krishnaji. And I found this poem in the second life. I don't think it's the second chapter. It's called The Second Life. The Second Life Journey. Dissolve the Inner Divide. So I just want to share this short poem that Preetaji and Krishnaji's 5-year-old daughter Loka wrote, that pretty much goes in hand with healing the inner child. And obviously, Loka's inner child is doing well. She's now, I believe, 18, maybe even more. But this was a poem she wrote when she was 5. And it's a lesson that her teacher gave her to write a poem. So here she starts. I am pretty as a buzzing bee. I don't want to be anyone different than me. I'm smart and intelligent, sweet and kind. How should I change what is already fine? I want to be a friend to all who are good. I am me, and you are you. And I just felt like that's such a sweet poem from a five-year-old, Loka. Now we're going to take a little time and do a serene mind meditation practice. And this is also taken out of the Four Sacred Secrets. It's one that you can find on YouTube. If you go to the Serene Mind Practice by Preetaji on YouTube. So sit still and take three deep abdominal breaths with total attention. Take some slow, deep inhales and longer exhales. Observe your state until you discover the exact emotion that you are feeling. Can you recognize any anxiety, discomfort, sadness? Or are you feeling joy? Happiness? Serenity? Or love? Observe the direction of the flow of your thinking. Are you obsessing over the past? Are you projecting a chaotic future? Or are you in the present? Now, imagine that there is a tiny flame at the center of your eyebrows. And see this flame and move it inward to the middle of your skull. Envision this flame floating in the middle of emptiness in the center of your brain. Take a nice deep breath, inhaling and exhaling. Take another breath, inhale, and when you exhale, you can gently open your eyes whenever you're ready. I did want to include that if you would like an audio guide of the Serene Mind Practice, there's an audio book edition at www.thefoursacredsecrets.com. this meditation would be on that audio.
Well, that was another beautiful show.
Mm-hmm.
In a beautiful state.
I think so. And maybe we want to sing to our...
Ooh, we try to get it at the first show.
Yeah.
Maybe we can be more harmonious. Which melody
we'll see. May the long time sun shine upon you, all love surround you, and the pure light within you, guide.